excited when we are the East Coast Horror Group. And without further delay, let's bring up Ms. Shawnee Smith.
Set there and what it was like to be, you know, in a remake of a film with that back. Good thing I didn't really realize the magnitude. I can think of as Kevin Dillon and his mullet. It was awesome. We'd be doing interviews with Kevin, and I'd be like, wow, it was like a spiritual battle, you know? And real serious, and Kevin's like, Sean, it's a horror movie, you know? Like, yeah, we had some fun, you know, got to fire some guns, rode the motorcycle. It's awesome.
Pretty good spread.
And I remember late night shooting all night long. Drinking lots of coffee. And Abbeville, Louisiana. That's right. The whole town, it was one main town road, and so the whole town got involved. I remember this kid who's got to be an adult now, Donnie, who's just a kid working on the crew, you know, and sometimes he'd fall asleep on my lap. Amazing. Family affair. There's one restaurant down there, we'll cook everybody food. Yeah, really sweet.
Do you remember a lot of practical effects? How did they do the blob? Or was it one of those things
Where
you had to pretend people were looking at
something? Oh, yeah. A lot of that. A lot of a piece of tape on a stick. You know? A lot of that's fun to act. But they did different things. At one time, they had, we were in Northridge and there was an art school there. And so they got all these art students to volunteer. They were like inside of a big piece of silk, and had like these mechanisms in their hand, and they all walked kind of together in unison and made it move. And sometimes it was like plastic crystal, sometimes it was stuff. They said, I said, what is this made out of? I said, well, you drink it in your McDonald's milkshake. I haven't had a lot of McDonald's milkshakes since then. But they use a lot of different kind of effects. Yeah.
So, you got to work with John Candy and Andrew Crowell there. What was it like working with them?
Awesome, pretty much. I remember him called me one night. He says, Johnny, this is John. Oh, hi, John. Are you asleep? Yeah, I'm just a kid. Hey, come downstairs. What? Come downstairs. There's a white limousine. Come on, Sean. He says, okay, come downstairs. It's him and Bon Jovi, the whole band, in a white limousine. And we commenced the touring, like the Red Light District, blues clubs. And John was up in the, got up on stage and sang blues. It was funny. I mean, I was 18, maybe even 19. But that was really fun. And John Bon Jovi just sat, there were like, you know, dancers on the stage, you know, and he's just telling me how much he loves his wife and about their life. That was pretty cool. Yeah, John was awesome. I says if he could be like a tiny bit as kind to himself as he was to everyone around him. He was so concerned, but he had his personal trainer there to help him. He was having him train everybody else. And, you know, he was just so kind, so generous, but clearly to himself.
So when you guys went to the place, like, were they expecting John Candy much of you?
I don't know. I mean, who expects that? It's great when it happens.
So you were in the TV series The Stand. Talk about working on a production like that. I'm sure it was comparable to a major Hollywood production.
Yeah, well, that was great because I hadn't worked for a few years. You know, I was like a kid making that kind of transition, and Diane Lane had that part, and then she got pregnant. Yeah. And she would have been, it filmed over such a long time, she would have been, So, I mean, I got a call out of nowhere, like, you're playing Julie Lowery in The Stand, McGarris and Gary Sinise, and I was like, what? It was one of those moments, like, am I dreaming? And that was fun. That was really fun.
Stephen Kinley said, good luck to you.
I got to meet him, yeah. Very quiet.
Really?
Yeah. He and Mick were really good buddies.
So, obviously you read the movie song. So talk about the audition process and just kind of walk us through how you, you know, became attached to the series.
Well, I didn't audition. I auditioned for the blog, and I can tell you that there were a lot of auditions. And I remember one audition, Chuck Russell was like, there was a couch in the office, and he had me acting out scenes like, you know, the tape on the stick. It's like, then you dive behind the couch, and then look up, and there it is, and you shoot at it. The things you do. But for Saw, James Gunn was a, you know, young kid, but he was an 80s fan. So he knew my work, and I was with the same, my manager was, Mark Berg had a management company, and my manager and I were there. And so they asked me to, gave me the script and said, I'd like you to do the part of Jotra. And I read it, and I was so disturbed. And I was just like, you know, I was going through a divorce, and I was just like, oh, I can't. It's a great script, you know, but I can't live this out right now. But I really appreciate it. They were like, meet us in the office tomorrow at 2. So I come in, and we're in the big conference room, and they showed me the jaw trap scene, because that's what they filmed. But Lee Whannell was in the jaw trap. That's how they got the movie made, as they filmed that scene. And so I watched it in the conference room. I was like, yeah, I want to do that part. I changed my mind.
It's got to be that James Gunn. Let's call you and tell you.
James Wan, yeah. I wish James Gunn would call me and tell me that now. Yeah.
So we've got to interview Tobin Bell here at Days of the Dead a few times. Talk about working with him. He's definitely an interesting fellow.
Yeah, they lucked out when they got him for that part. He's like scientific. Yeah. So there was no hole unfilled with Tobin, you know, like in the first movie, that's him on the floor. Anytime you see that body on the floor, that's him. And when it came time for Saw 3, I mean, there are probably still marks on the sidewalk that we burned just from walking and talking, because we saw the script and we were like, you know, we could have done like master and servant and apprentice, and we were like, no, they're like, it's kind of a love story, Saw 3. Not everyone gets that, but it really is. And so we just got right into what would their daily life be? What's their relationship? And they probably like talked philosophy, and she cared for him. You know, we worked out a little business with tea, you know, like ways that I would care for him. And that led to the opening scene when you first see me. I'm in his hoodie and I'm bringing in groceries. And that's how we approached it. I probably screwed myself out of being like a super villain in hindsight.
So, you were involved in obviously with the Mask Trail and also the Needles one, which is the one that got
that awful. Yeah.
So, do you have a particular? I assume you've seen the films, all the films. Do you have?
Like this.
Do you have a trap that's your favorite personally, besides the ones you act in? They all had symbolism associated with them. That's why it made them so horrendous.
Yeah. You know, they're pretty horrific. I think that, you know, not just because I was in it, but I think the needle pit and the jaw trap were pretty epic.
They were. Yeah.
Yeah, they told me right before we filmed that scene, they had college students taking those needles out one by one. And they didn't realize they needed like 100 times more needles than they thought, so, you know, and put them in the monofilament one by one. I mean, 300,000 or something. Right before we shot the scene, they said, you know, there's one we are not sure.
the odds were,
yeah.
Now, would you consider Jigsaw a serial killer?
Would you?
Personally, no.
No?
And he gave you the option.
I gave you the option.
Awful options, but he gave you the option. And he never really killed anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just curious if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I certainly don't think Amanda saw him as that. You know, Shawnee Smith, I don't know if he was doing such a service to people. I think there are probably gentler ways to try and wake people up to appreciate their lives, but it was an effective method. But yeah, I don't think Amanda saw him that way. I mean, she loved him.
Almost like the savior of sorts.
Yeah, he was her savior. And that's the end. Was so tragic, you know, because she thought he had betrayed her.
A lot of horror movies, the writing isn't always the best, but it seemed with Saw that they really cared about the story, and it really cared about every character that you saw in the films. Talk a little bit about that, to be able to have such a great story intermixed with the gore and the violence.
Yeah, well, I think that, that all came from the first one. That first bit of genius, which I always love, like, a lot of great things come from the confines, like the limitations they had. So they had no money, they were very limited. So they're like, what can we come up with for, that we could film in one room with two people? And so this incredible idea came out of that. And everything else, I mean, how many, seven of them now, have kind of ridden out of that initial concept. What are you doing here? Is anyone allowed you into this place? Security, clearly. Thank you.
My first exposure to you and your work.
This is our host. I don't know if I'm
host. Adolfo Dorta.
Mr. Adolfo.
Hi.
So my first exposure to your work was with Becker, watching Becker. And
talk about good writing.
I know, right? That's my favorite. Comedy is everyone, all the actors are talking, and comedy is the hardest in the timing. But your role, the time that you had, the quick witness that you had, I think was just amazing. Some of the best sitcom history, right?
Oh my gosh.
Talk about you spent obviously a lot of time there. Did you guys have back and forth like that? Just Offset too? Was the relationship similar?
Yeah, Ted didn't know what to do with me. I mean, at the time, you just never know. It was like when I auditioned, Dave Hackles say to me, he says, every time you came in to audition, you had completely different hair. I was like, is this the same actress? And then you'd open your mouth, and I was like, oh, it's her. But that was a very, he never knew. But I think he enjoyed the entertainment. So we had a lot of fun. But it's funny, because I just did a movie with Pamela Reed. It comes on, I think in 2 days, maybe the 26th. It's just a sweet little like family film comedy called Savannah Sunrise on INSP Network, Inspiration Network. But she's great. I don't know if you know, she was Kindergarten Cop.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, she's awesome. And she says that your time, she goes, well, you have this timing because you're so musical. Interesting. I never connected it to musicality, but I thought that made a lot of sense. So, but to time, I guess Charlie's Ted Danson and Charlie Sheen talk about to timing.
Yeah.
And it was fun. Linda had a lot of the Ted would joke, I got a lot of the punchlines.
You did, yeah.
But then in anger management, it's like, I really enjoy setting it up for Charlie. And then he would just knock it out. But I love setting it up for him as much as I love slamming it out, playing Linda. Yeah, it's fun. It's nice. It's like they give and take.
With Charlie Sheen, is it, you see what you see is what you get with him?
Yeah. You know, this is a crazy world. And actually, when you're very sane, right, and your heart is very true, like, and you're righteous somewhere in there, and you're in this crazy world, it's like tricky business, you know? It's hard. But the craziness is like a response to that goodness, you know, and then just badass talent. Yeah, great actor.
Looking back at your career, is there one role that stands out as maybe one of your favorites?
Probably Linda Becker.
So what are some of the projects that you're currently working on?
My 6-year-old rascal son. My 10-year-old rascal son. Let's see. Well, I just did that movie with Pamela, Savannah Sunrise. And working on this documentary. It's a tough one. Writing and directing. Well, I can't tell you what it's about. It'll fall on the floor and start crying. But maybe it'll get done one day. It's worth doing. What else? I just did a movie called Believe. I just did 2 really pleasant movies that, you know, the family watch.
Some more stole you?
No. I don't let them watch television. Stop. It'll be a long time.
Not making do shopping commercials, are you?
I love my mother, but that's not me. No, I shelter them. But you know, that's how it goes, right?
Yeah.
You know? My mom's all right. We all have our faults.
So do we have any questions from the audience? Real quick, that can come out to you.
Anyone? Don't be scared.
They're like, well, she pretty much covered it.
She was lovely later.
How did you get involved in doing music and being a band?
Well, my father was a big jazz fan. And so since the time I can remember, he would take my brother and me to jazz clubs. And he'd just be there with his eyes closed, you know, and every little thing each instrument did, you know, he'd see it hidden. And so there I'd be like my eyes closed, feeling the music. And my mom sang. It was always around, you know, and then I think somehow I came to know all these like heavy metal musicians like Robert Trujillo and Roy Mayorga and Benji Webb, you know, Skindred, Dubhor. I don't even know how it happened, but so I say, oh, it would be interesting to have like a real heavy music, but with a very feminine female front, was the concept. You know, we're a little ahead of the time, and like 3 years after we quit, this became popular, but there are much better singers than me. You know, it became a sound. But, so I think I just kind of like, there's something in that, you know, I put my ear right up to the guitar, and you know, it was like, I thought for a while I could just blow it all out, you know, it's like kind of back to Charlie being sane in a crazy world, you know. You try different methods to, you know, but then I realized that somewhere along the line I realized that it's like an appetite, you know, if you feed it, it grows. I was like, well, where do I go from here, you know? Although I still have to play around with the $5 hoe being a superhero. I think maybe, like you get James Gunn to direct that, Steve Niles to do the comic strip, we might have something.
Anybody else here in the audience have anything for Johnny?
What was it like working with James Wan and working with Darren Housman on the second song? What were their different styles and what did you work with?
Well, Well, James is like a, he's like a mad scientist, you know? I mean, he was like, came from Australia. No, nobody knew who he was getting this movie made, but he was on that set like, that you never saw him where he wasn't in the creative turmoil, you know, like thinking of, because he was always having to sacrifice the vision in his head, you know, the shots, because we made this movie for nothing. So it was like all day you could see him just going like considering what he had to cut and how he could do it different, and he just always got these crazy ideas of how to shoot it, where to put the camera. And so he was just never not in that fight of just like mad creative scientist and will fight a bloody fight to get what he wants. And you see his career, you know, it was worth the fight. And he's still like that, you know, he's the real deal. Still has a sense of humor, you know, he's still that same, he's just an artist, you know. Bousman is more like, you know, the guy at the party. It was like, he's got his own creative, you know, but just totally different. You know, he's always pulling pranks and on the set. Yeah, totally different, you know, different vibes. But both were fun, you know.
Anybody else have anything you want to ask Shoni? Once, going twice. Everybody put your hands together for the brilliant and talented Shoni Smith.